JP, JP Messer. I'm a member of the Oakland Privacy Working Group. This over here, raise your hand, is Brian Hofer. He's also a member of that working group, and he was the chair of the City Council Privacy Committee that the City Council set up to draft the privacy policy for the Domain Awareness Center. Are there other committee members here? Aesthetics? Okay. So the Oakland Privacy Working Group was formed more than a year and a half ago in the wake of the Edward Snowden revelations, and it quickly focused on the Domain Awareness Center. The Domain Awareness Center first came to the community's awareness sometime in July of 13, but it had been in the works in Oakland for a couple of years before that. Nobody knew anything about it. So what is the Domain Awareness Center? It was designed to be a spy center, a mini NSA-like facility, which would take in information from cameras, from ShotSpotter, social media, license plate readers, anything else they could feed into it. It'd be capable of tracking people through facial and gait as in walking, recognition. It could discern patterns in your life through like where you were via license plate scans, social media, and other data. All of this supposedly to prevent crime. All right. By the way, if anybody hasn't gotten them, there's handouts on the table to the right there. The opposition to the DAC built through the fall and into the winter of 13 and 14, and it really came from all over. Civil liberties groups, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, a good number of anarchists, the Muslim community, African Americans, Latinos, immigrant communities, the Dan Siegel for Mayor campaign. We went at it from all angles. We got resolutions against it from labor unions and from political clubs. We lobbied the city council. We held protest rallies. We packed city council meetings. We generated a lot of publicity. That upswelling finally caused the city council to restrict the Domain Awareness Center that they were proposing to have spy on everybody in Oakland to just the port of Oakland, and also critically to insist that before the Domain Awareness Center could be started up, he actually put the privacy policy would have to be approved by the city council. As it turned out, we were just one vote short of killing the whole thing at the beginning of March, but we couldn't get the final push to actually kill it. And you all have the handout. You can read the history more in more detail of the DAC FAQ that's on there. Now, thanks to Brian and the others on the committee, we have a strong privacy policy that's been written. People from other municipalities and areas around the country are calling Brian and asking him about it. It could easily become a national model. And he's going to present a synopsis of it now. But it doesn't stop there, unfortunately. As you might be aware, the sheriff of Alameda County once acquired a drone despite massive opposition to spy on people if he wants to. The police are using surveillance equipment without warrants or oversight. And the list of privacy invasions nationwide is endless. So the committee wants to, beyond the privacy policy, it wants to extend the privacy policy to all of Oakland, not just to the Domain Awareness Center. And It wants to get the City Council to pass a open and transparent policy for the acquisition of any surveillance equipment that they might want to get. So, Brian's going to present this in three parts: the DAC privacy policy, the open privacy policy, and the surveillance ordinance, based on the sheet you have. It's divided into three sections. One of the sheets you have says the proposed policies. We'll do a Q&A after each section, and then we'll have a final Q&A at the end. And here's Brian.
Facial recognition, license plate, readers, cameras throughout all OUSD public housing projects, all linked into the DAC. Two unanimous votes, by March 4th, became one vote shy of stopping the entire project. So while some thought the failure to completely stop this project was a loss on March 4th, I see it as a huge victory. We scaled this back to a port infrastructure project, in essence. And it allowed the beginning of a privacy conversation with the City of Oakland. I think if we would have actually killed the project, we might not have our foot in the door to do the surveillance equipment ordinance. So it's a really big opportunity for us to have actual legislative reform here in the City of Oakland. So first I'm going to let Aesthetics, who sat on the committee with me, he's a data guy, he'll be a little bit better explaining some of the technical capabilities of what currently exists in the domain awareness.
I think we put that prepared for us to do the image.
So what happened to the mic? You should move off the mic.
Okay, so long story short, I did create a diagram for all this to kind of explain the more technical elements of how it all goes together. And if you go to tinyurl.com/OaklandDAC, you can see it. The whole thing has been incredibly confusing, and we have been asking all kinds of questions. It took a long time to ask the right question to get the right information. So there are two general components to it. There's the Oakland port, which we do not have authority over, and then there's the Oakland DAC, which we do have authority over. So what happens is the Oakland DAC is set up as a closed network. That means that there's no internet connection in or out. Any software that's installed, basically, it can't leave, which one of the reasons that's good, that means that nobody from the NSA or Google or anyone else can dial in and see what's going on. So they would have to go through a process, get in a court order, and abide by our data sharing policies that Brian will get into later. We don't have authority over the DAC, or over the port, but the port is where the video cameras are. So what happens is the video cameras record all this stuff, and then they broadcast it into the DAC. And the DAC, the analogy I've used is kind of like YouTube. You go to YouTube and you watch a video, you click on play, you're not actually downloading the video on your computer. You don't have the video file on your desktop or anything, but you can still click play, and that's what the DAC effectively is. It's a YouTube link into a camera that's held in another system. The one thing that we do record in terms of data is we create a bookmark. So let's say, I'll just do a quick example here. Somebody with a baseball bat is walking through the DAC, and assuming it's met the requirements necessary that Brian will get into, they can make a bookmark, say, here's a timestamp, here's what I saw. And does that pretty much suffice what it is? So it's actually, there's no video at this time being collected into it, and we've done basically everything that we can to make sure that it doesn't happen. So is there anything else? Okay. I'll take questions later on.
What we try to do is make it as restrictive as possible, and that's really what we've achieved. We'll jump into the privacy policy. How do we even get here? To show how bad the system was, the Domain Awareness Center was on the consent calendar in July. That is for ceremonial, non-controversial items. So you can tell that the city did not even consider And this is after the first Snowden revelation had happened. Did not even consider a privacy policy. Josh luckily saw it on the agenda and was the first speaker and said, where's your privacy policy? The council at least had the foresight to require in that vote, even though they voted to proceed, to require a privacy policy before enactment. It was still in city control, and they burned the clock for months and months and months, which actually worked out in our favor because we ended up building a pretty large coalition by March 4th. In March 4th, in the resolution that passed, they gave control of the policy to the citizens, and happened to be me and some others, the ACLU and PSF. So, briefly, what is the framework? The framework is that we have very narrow allowable uses. One of the main problems with this project was mission creep. They wanted to use it for everything. DC Deputy Chief Bashir sat in our committee, one of our committee meetings. He said he actually does want to use it for petty theft. So that would require cameras everywhere. If you need to watch every little kid trying to steal a camera, candy bar, you need cameras everywhere. So they really do envision this as a full citywide project, and that's what we're trying to eliminate. The port grant money was meant to secure the port. That's what it's used for, and that's what we define the allowable uses as. Secondly, if you read the East Bay Express December 2013 investigative article that really opened up everybody's eyes, that's what caught my attention. The emails aren't talking about crime that the city was sending back and forth. They're talking about Occupy. So what we built in, because we do have a history of vandalism in some of our protests, we built in thresholds that must be met for reasonable suspicion, for written certification of the facts, so that when protests do get monitored, and they will be, all the acts are going to get recorded. The use log, the audit, everything is going to be publicly available so that we get to judge whether this equipment is being used appropriately. And that's really the entire framework of the ordinance that I'm going to talk about later and the DAC privacy policy. You have an informed public debate. You have informed council consent. You have ongoing oversight. You have accountability. You have independent audits. And you have liability for misuse. We built in both statutory damages and a private right of action. Not only for small things, there might be a $500 penalty, but let's say there's something large, a civil liberties violation, or you get blackmailed, whatever scenario pops up, you would have the standing to bring a lawsuit. And that is going to be a touchy issue. It's going to require a separate ordinance. There's going to be union resistance, staff resistance to that. So that's something we need to make sure that doesn't get watered down. Data sharing is prohibited, absent MOU, Memorandum of Understanding that has been approved by the City Council. I'm sure you've read enough stories in the last year and a half of DEA, FBI, CIA, everybody sending data around, sharing data, accessing the same databases. There's a very controversial program called Suspicious Activity Reporting, which has been used to target, especially recently, has been
testes.
Which has been recently used to target the Muslim community, such silly things as buying 100 bottles of water. Led to a suspicious activity report. That report is now inside an FBI database. You have no data retention. Somebody else queues up your name, you're going to be in an FBI database. So we're trying to limit all these little things as much as we can. Along with this policy, we're asking for a standing privacy committee to oversee the DAC, any changes to the policy, and also to help advise the city on privacy-related matters. We have three levels of audits. We have internal for their own compliance, and this goes along with privacy officers. We have internal and external privacy officer roles we're asking for city approval of. We have internal audits. We have external or city auditor audits. And then we're going to have a separate independent third party audit. I've met with various staff and council members. I've met with Chief Wendt this last Wednesday. Everyone's saying the right things, that we're going to have maximum transparency built into this. So it's going to be very significant, assuming those votes actually go forward and we get them. One of the tactics that I used when we were debating in January, February, and March was attacking this from a cost perspective. One of the dirty little secrets of surveillance equipment is that it doesn't work often. It's
ShopSpotter is useless. Our chief raised a big fuss last March when he said he wasn't going to renew the contract. It doesn't work. Menlo Park, which I commend them, they recently introduced a license plate ordinance with only a 30-day retention period, and they built in required transparency reporting. One stolen vehicle. It just doesn't work. Not at the price that's being charged for it. So what we're building in addition to the civil liberty safeguards is a lot of taxpayer protection metrics that I think going down the road people are going to see, because surveillance cameras have never effectively produced long-term downturns in crime. They're going to see that this equipment is not worth paying for. It's not worth staffing. I know a few of the council members, Mayor Schaaf, they don't want to pay for this right now. We do have a two-year operating grant to staff two people. Nobody wants to pay for it beyond that. So maybe from the money side, we can also attack this expansion of the program. Again, as I said, statutory damages, misdemeanor charges, and the private right of action. Making sure that there's liability for misuse so that the staff is focused on what they're doing. Oakland shows up to every protest. I know when there's just recently an Urban Shield debriefing at Oakland High School, there was three police cars there before the event even started. There was no suspicion of wrongdoing. It wasn't a protest. It wasn't a march. That's intimidation. That is infringement upon civil liberty protected activity. And Oakland does that routinely. So what we're trying to build in is these protected activity certifications. Every time that DAC gets turned on, it's going to be recorded and it's going to be published. And we're all going to get to see that if they really are targeting Occupy like we suspect they are, and others. So I think that gives a synopsis of the policy. Anything I can explain better, more in depth?
You said we will get to serve it to audit the results of Urban with the film. Who's the we that gets to audit these things? I'm not clear about that.
They will be publicly available, so you can view them. We have independent city auditor and also third-party external audits.
We
the city of Oakland. The policy has built in three separate levels. I might be speaking in the we because I'm on the committee, but you will be able, either via the Public Record Act or just online, which is what we anticipate, you will be able to review the results of audits. You can make your own public record request for video. To the extent not prohibited by law, you will be able to view everything, use logs, any of the data, unless expressly prohibited by law.
The problem with that kind of thing is the laws are all great, but who's going to actually do this, and how are we going to who's going to maintain an adequate attention to what's going on a regular basis? Because, and also the wayside, it's like, you forget about it.
I can introduce you to a few members of Oakland Privacy. We pepper the city with Public Record Act requests all the time. And again, we're going to have an ongoing, it's almost universally been said to me by every council member, we're going to have a standing privacy committee. So that committee is going to have oversight. These audits are going to be coming through the committee. We're going to be viewing them on an ongoing basis. And we have mandatory annual compliance reporting. All those audits are going to get set in a public forum before the city council.
So you have reason to believe at this time that there will be continuing attention to this?
Yes.
Is Brian not committee chosen?
The Brooks resolution on March 4th allowed city council members to appoint up to two members each. They did not all do so. I think we had nine. At the moment, we're leaving it undefined. We're just asking for a standing privacy committee. Usually, that's the mayor appoints standing committee members here in Oakland. We're hopeful that the council will keep control like they did under the Brooks resolution so that it's a little bit more democratically appointed.
Okay.
So that leads into the standing committee and the citywide privacy policy. Right now, we have no publicly available data or retention policies for any surveillance equipment in Oakland. We delete license plate data when our storage gets full. That has allowed some license plates to retain up to 4 to 5 years. Some of you might not think that's a big deal. If you've ever gone on the Google and used your little GPS tracker to see where you've been, and it can show you everything, it's the same thing with license plate data. It can show that you've, you know, gone to the marijuana dispensary, you've gone to the Occupy activist, or that you're cheating on your wife, or whatever you're doing. These associations are very revealing. Metadata is very revealing. We can put together a very accurate picture of you with very limited data. The more data that is retained, the easier that is. And that's what the DAC was meant to do. We have over 300 terabytes of storage sitting empty right now. It was meant to hold all of this data. And the ability to see patterns would be easy. Every police department in the Bay Area, except for Oakland, automatically sends their license plate data to NCRIC, which is the San Francisco Fusion Center. The reason we don't, our system is too old. That's the only reason we don't do it. So we haven't been able to interface with their system. But all of this data is getting soaked up everywhere. It's a hacker risk, it's a law enforcement risk, it's a civil liberties risk, it's a privacy invasion. We have the right to privacy under the California Constitution. If you're not guilty of, if there's no criminal suspicion, you don't need to retain this data. What we're trying to do is push shorter and shorter retention periods. There is a government code provision that requires all public record acts, which is a license plate image, to be held for 2 years. The Attorney General's office has not taken a position recently on various municipalities that are ignoring that. As I mentioned, Menlo Park is down to 30 days, Tiburon is down to 30 days. When I met with Chief Went Wednesday, he said he would support 30 to 60 days. So there's a lot of movement all over to get shorter and shorter retention periods. That still allows law enforcement to track stolen vehicles and kidnap victims, Amber Alerts, all those things that will still be needed, but to have a much less risk of civil liberties. It also goes to just taxpayer concerns, less storage, less cost. So right now we're pushing, along with the Standing Privacy Committee, is the need for a citywide umbrella privacy policy. And again, from Mayor Chaffon down, it's universally supported. So these two things, it's going to be important. You know, we have a stacked committee right now. I mean, there's, you know, no bones about it. We were able to stack this committee and get who we wanted on it. It's going to be important for the Standing Committee that we either get the same people or similar people of a civil liberties mind to be on there so that we can control these things, keep going down the road.
So how does, like, the two steps, the DAC privacy policy and the transparency ordinance, like, how do they interact with the process that we're in
city? So I'll get to the surveillance equipment ordinance in 1 sec, but okay. Let's say even with the citywide policy. Right now we see the citywide privacy policy as sort of an umbrella, a master policy that would have multiple policies underneath it. The surveillance equipment ordinance would be solely about surveillance equipment. So a little bit more narrow.
So we have the DAC privacy, the city privacy.
And then a surveillance ordinance.
So
yes.
Which happens in what order?
The DAC policy is going to happen probably by February. The standing committee hasn't been created yet, and it will just take time to draft. I mean, it took us 9+ months to draft the DAC policy because we didn't have any models to work off. We're the first ones going through this. So it took us a while to get going. So the DAC policy, people just want to get it done. There's a lot of fatigue on both sides. That'll get through. And then I imagine in the subsequent...
So that's like, that's a city council vote?
Yeah.
Public safety or not?
The DAC policy is simply a policy. It's not an ordinance.
Okay.
So it'll just be a straight vote.
And
that does need to happen by the full council. So sometime, probably in March, it would be final.
City policy, and then after that,
that's dependent.
Would that be above the DAC?
Yeah, I would think it's the overarching umbrella, and there'll be multiple policies underneath it, is how I think in practicality it's going to work out. And I want to restate how amazing it's been from losing 2 unanimous votes to what we're doing now. Oakland Privacy has been interviewed, I'm sure, media outlets in at least 30 different states by now. A few UK outlets have picked this up. Everyone is watching Oakland because it's rare that you actually beat back surveillance, that you beat back the police state. Kamala Harris is sponsoring a privacy and surveillance equipment forum this Wednesday. I'll be speaking there along with ACLU, EFF. The DAC is going to be a case study. We have law enforcement and city attorneys from Los Angeles all the way north that are coming to study the DAC, that are studying our policy and that want to see how on the municipal level how people are responding to surveillance equipment, how they're regulating it. So we have a really big chance here to be a national model, to really help, along with Menlo Park and Richmond and other areas that have shown interest in really starting to beat this stuff back and actually have a feel-good ending for once. Yeah, so it's Wednesday, 8:30. It's at the State Building just off Civic Center Plaza, the Marx Conference Room. If you register by email, it's free to the public. If you get me after this, I can give you the flyer and the email address. But yes, it is free. There's three panels. I think it goes from 8:30 to 1:30. The Surveillance Equipment Ordinance. Again, as I mentioned, Oakland, just like every other municipality, is the Wild West. We have no regulations. We have not had a public debate. We have not had an informed city council on the use of surveillance equipment. Not only whether it's license plate readers, ShotSpotter. I don't know if all of you are familiar with Stingray. Stingray mimics a cell phone tower. It's a mobile little box. You can take it around and hide it anywhere. It tricks all of our phones into connecting to it. Doesn't matter what carrier you're on, it just sends out the strongest signal. It pulls our phone books, our text messages. It is highly invasive. It is arguably, it is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. There's been used for years. Oakland has had Stingrays since 2007. We have signed, what I believe illegally, we have signed a non-disclosure agreement not to disclose their use. That means the city council has never approved their use. The public has never been informed that this equipment even existed, let alone that we're using it and paying for it. So again, in keeping with the DAC policy, it's a framework we're trying to impose on the city and rise it to the level of an ordinance so it's actually an enforceable law. Informed public debate before we even go down the path. In Oakland, we try to pay for everything by a grant, so we can pretend that it doesn't cost anything. It really does have a cost. And if we can get involved at the beginning before we go down this path, it'll be a lot easier to either stop or minimize the harm. So we're going to have informed public debate at the beginning, informed city council decisions that fully understand all the technical capabilities. When the Domain Awareness Center was going through the council, it was painfully obvious that they had no idea what the capabilities of this technology was. Most of the public had no understanding of what the technology was. We're going to have operational and data protocols for all equipment. It's going to be built, again, on maximum transparency, and there will be liability for misuse. You may be aware that the ACLU, in the middle of November, announced a statewide campaign. They have a model of surveillance equipment ordinance. That's what we're pushing here. It's extremely practical. It is likely to get adopted without being watered down too much. The LA Times had a great editorial on it. It said it's unbelievably pragmatic. Law enforcement would be silly to reject it. Locally, Supervisor John Avalos has committed to introducing it. Santa Clara Supervisor Joe Simidian has committed to introducing it. In Oakland, hopefully we'll have a sponsor soon. Richmond is going to be favorable. San Carlos, there's a lot of local interest to get this thing on the books. And again, I'm trying to really underline how important it is that we have been given control of setting up this framework, of really bringing the public back in the government, bringing oversight back, and having transparency where all this stuff has been in the dark. That's why all this was allowed to happen. No one was looking. No one had oversight. I don't know if you just saw this in the last 2 days, a new discovery. The DEA had phone records for the last 15 years. That's yet another huge revelation. And at this point, it's just burnout. No one's even paying attention. We're just like so used to the fact that, oh, great, we've been getting spied on. But there's a lot of damage that's happening in the dark. And so what we're trying to do is bring the sunlight back into the process at the grassroots level, because that's the only time meaningful change happens. Become a national model, or at least a Bay Area model. Start it in California and then watch it catch elsewhere. So OPD has had stingrays since 2007, and even used to brag about it. In 2007, 8, and 9, they would put their statistics, the arrest statistics, up on the website. So that must have been before the non-disclosure agreement kind of came into play, before the FBI started shutting everything down, but they used to be public about it. That went away in 2009. They're not really using it right now. I knew that elsewhere, but Chief Went also confirmed that to me, because we've all moved on to 4G cell phones. We have a 2G, 3G system. They are currently applying for a grant in partnership with the Alameda DA and the City of Fremont Police to share the new Hailstorm upgrade, and that would get all of our 4G phones. So that's what we're trying to get in place now before we get this new upgrade. How would it change? The ordinance is retroactive. All existing equipment would have to meet the same standards. Can we kill the stingray? Possibly, because it's such a controversial item. But if it survives, how might that look? Independent audits, deletion of everyone else's data. Chief Went told me that's what they do. As I mentioned, it's a dragnet, okay? So it sucks up all our data in this room. He's got a warrant for your number, but he sucked up everybody else's information. He told me that they are deleting everybody else's information. He goes, we have no use for it. I don't want to store it. We delete it. Okay. Are you willing to put that in writing and be independently audited? He said yes. So that's very encouraging to me if something like a stingray is going to survive. And so that's the basic framework that would apply. Any existing equipment, anything coming forward that meets the definition of surveillance equipment, is going to have to go through the same protocols, through the same public process.
And is there any way for them to get around it by having another agency or something do the dirty work and then...
Right, so it's not just purchasing, sharing, using, acquiring, being gifted, granted, loaned, etc. It's broad. If they're going to use it or even benefit from the data, they have to go through the same protocols.
In terms of cost, if you want to think about what cost is going to be involved, is it going to be cost for training to use it, for maintaining it, for auditing it, going through it, analyzing it? These are all going to be continuing costs if it's going to be as effective.
And that's all built into the protocols, by the way. They have to justify.
Right. Yep. Okay, but I mean, you were saying before about, like you said, there's no cost. Yeah, all these things are background costs that are, like, built in that nobody talks about. So I'm confused. I'm a little confused about something. You said earlier that a lot of surveillance equipment is not effective and it doesn't work. On the other hand, and I'm not trying to... antagonistic here. I'm just trying to be understand, have some clarity about this. On the other hand, there's all this stuff that we're talking about that sounds pretty scary. But if it's not effective, what's the deal here? I mean, so it would help to have some clarity about this. I remember when I watched MI5 on the series on MI5 about the British FBI agency, right? I've seen this stuff. Looked like science fiction, facial recognition, and it looks like, oh my god. And then I'm suddenly finding out a year later, wait, this really exists. But the way it looked on the TV show was astonishing.
Yeah.
So, back to reality here. So, you say it's not that effective. Well, what are we talking about here? Is it effective? We need to be as clear as possible about that.
And it's not an absolute statement to say that none of this technology has never worked. but it certainly does not work at the cost. Facial recognition software is getting better and better. Chicago police tried to claim they used it in a couple high-profile arrests, and it turned out they were lying. It didn't work. They claimed to use it in Boston. That was proven false. The Boston Fusion Center existed before the Boston Marathon bombing. They didn't know this. They actually had Sarnoff in the FBI office months ago. The data accumulation on him didn't lead to any proper conclusions, clearly. These things happen over and over where these fusion centers and the data accumulation, they've created so many haystacks, they're not able to find the needle, which has been the problem with big data. Cameras have never, ever long-term reduced crime. There's anecdotal evidence that maybe in a secured parking garage they have had a limited effect, otherwise they just don't. London has the most CCTV cameras everywhere. They've been having the largest riots they've ever had. Again, license plate data, sure, limited instances where stolen vehicles have been found, but to the overall cost for what you're getting back as a taxpayer, to me, it doesn't seem justified.
So, I mean, in terms of the effectiveness that I heard from you is that they haven't shown the effectiveness for which they were advertised to be used versus what they can use it for all these other purposes that they don't want to disclose. Right? So, in other words, they're not reducing car theft, but they are keeping information on a lot of people, where they're going, what they're doing, kind of thing, which they don't want to disclose. They just want to say, oh, we're doing it for car theft reduction, but it doesn't do that.
And that's why we're trying to tie a lot of our metrics to purpose specification, okay? You told me this was to prevent terror. How many acts of terror did you prevent? And you're going to find out, zero. Or, you know, one at $5. And so it's not worth all this lobbying and the costs that are going on.
Well, I mean, arguably over time, as technology gets cheaper and better, like voice to text, text to speech, it gets better over the years. And eventually, it will come closer to what our expectations are.
Right.
So maybe our resistance of it can be based on, in our own minds, on that part that, okay, it's not 100% yet, but it's going to be there. Because they know where they're going.
Yeah, this is, again, just another angle to try to attack it at now, is from a taxpayer perspective.
That's all I was going to say.
Yeah.
If I may, that's like a third point argument
right.
to the next part of the population pyramid to whom that makes my resonance. But I think for us, who are on the the forefront of civil liberties, it's as you're saying, we don't want to build policy around that assumption. And you're not building policy around the assumption that it is can be effective. It's just a talking point to broaden this. But I think it's a good point to not get lulled into any sense of things not being effective. You have to build policy assuming. This technology can do all kinds of things. And looking ahead to what it's going to do in 5 years, because that's moving so fast.
I think if you think about what the capabilities are now, realize they're very cost-effective for monitoring criticism and dissent. And people in power have various legal and illegal means to make your life miserable if they can pinpoint you. So if they've got good pictures of everybody in a march, all of a sudden, your business license has been questioned. Or the standard thing that they do to restaurants they don't like, is suddenly have health inspectors show up. And I'm sure it works for that now.
One of the things the police are saying now in San Jose is that they're only going to use live feed. And you, when you started talking at the beginning of this, you mentioned something about that. Can you describe why they're talking about it in terms of live feed? Because, I mean, on the surface, I mean, that is just an outright lie, you know? And it's just like, what you kind of described something about what the Jack Center does with that YouTube. The YouTube goes into them somehow, and maybe that's what they were trying to say down in San Jose, but I mean, they're going to record stuff, and I wanted to talk about it in terms of public records, which is, you know, very basic dialogue, and they won't even talk that way.
So we have a unique situation in Oakland where our port is semi-autonomous. We have no authority, my committee has no authority to regulate the port staff or the port equipment, which exists separately from the DAC. The video and data feeds feed into the DAC, the brain, so to speak, which we do have jurisdiction over. So what we've done is make a very tight policy to govern this very narrow item. And that's why we're pushing for the citywide privacy policy and for the surveillance equipment ordinances to get jurisdiction of these other items.
Does that go into a federal system, federal information?
Well, that's, again, why we have a no data sharing prohibition. Unless the council approves a memorandum of understanding, which would, again, have to go through the public process, at the moment, no. But that was certainly on the table at the beginning. As far as the drone and live feed, I mean, I'm not familiar enough quite with San Jose to know, you know, what their intentions were. What Aesthetics was explaining earlier is that the cameras are always recording at the port. The port does have its own kind of brain, its own system. It feeds into our software application in Oakland. And we have the ability to bookmark or point towards the video frames that we might need. Let's say there's a fleeing vehicle. It's going down 7th Street fleeing the port, and the DAC operator needs to get the license plate number to tell OPD, hey, you're looking for a brown Chevy with two doors. That bookmark allows it to point to the exact video feed that it needs quickly. That's the utility. It's meant to be a real-time coordinating system to help first responders. What we're worried about is, in its original intent, it was just going to record everything. And we have 300 terabytes, that's a lot of video, and it would have just been soaking it all up. So we're saying, no, if you're going to record, if you're going to hit the record button, you need to have a reason. And there's got to be reasonable suspicion. It needs to be tied to an allowable use. And it even goes even further. We also have need to know built in. It's not just that there's, everyone can just walk into the DAC. You have to have a security clearance, and you have to have an active involvement in the investigation, which is, again, limited to an allowable use. So we're really trying to limit mission creep as much as possible. If there's no more ordinance questions, just quickly going to our next steps or how you can help. We've been postponed 3 times, but our new city council date is February 10th. We're going to be before the Public Safety Committee, which is where we started out last year. Desley Brooks was just appointed the chair. That's a very big deal for us. Dan Cowell, which is this area's council member, and Abel Guillen. That makes up 3 of the good votes. Then we also have Noel Gallo, who was in favor of a full-blown citywide DAC. He was the chair last year. So we have 3 out of 4 good votes on the Public Safety Committee going forward to try to get all the stuff that I just talked about out of committee. Once we get to the full city council, we've got 2 to 3 more. We've got 3 more good votes. We have the support of the mayor on at least most of this stuff. We have the support of the chief as to transparency. So if we ever had a perfect fact pattern to get real, meaningful, legislative, long-term reform done, it's right now. But we have to make sure that we actually show up. We won last March because we had 400 people show up. We had 200 unanimous speakers. We had 40 groups sign on our joint letters of opposition. We had a ton of press. That's why we won.
So we need to replicate that again to make sure people know we're still paying attention. Yes, sir. Dan is one of our strongest voices on the council. He was very interested in sponsoring the surveillance equipment ordinance. There was some election noise and jockeying for committee positions, so I don't want to misrepresent anything, but he's very interested. There was certainly an educational process that had to happen. They didn't quite understand all the technology, but that's not to say he's still in favor of it. When I first met with him, he said, "You're never going to take away my license plate readers. I love license plate readers. I want them." So they can be in favor of certain pieces of equipment, but also still strongly supportive of the privacy safeguards we're trying to get put into place. I think he, like most people, take the position any tool can be used for good or for bad. He's willing to put the safeguards in place that we're asking for and the transparency, but he's probably still going to support the use of those tools overall. And, you know, that's how we'll go forward. Yes, sir. Yeah, so in July, you know, as I mentioned, the first vote, facial recognition software, license plate readers, shot spotter, cameras everywhere, full-blown citywide. Facial recognition and license plate readers got taken off fairly early. By the time we get to March 4th, it was restricted physically to the confines of the port perimeter, which means everything that had been part of the city was excluded. The city shot spotter, city cameras, school cameras, Oakland housing cameras. And the Brooks resolution also created the Citizens Committee, which I chair, and gave us control of drafting that privacy policy. It also, there were some other minor edits that the police RMS and CAD system, that it has some effect on those protocols as well. Yeah, it's on the City of Oakland website. If you just look on the legislative tab, and JP has some handout sheets which have the web links. If you don't know who your council member is, I urge you to go there. You don't have to be an Oakland resident to speak or to contact them. Email, phone calls work great. Check out oaklandprivacy.wordpress.com. We're going to start putting up all our call to actions. You know, we want to get a lot of people to start calling and pressuring the council prior to that February 10th vote to make sure this stuff doesn't get watered down. If we can clear the subcommittee, we're going to have a really good shot at real change. And these opportunities don't come around this significant, I don't think, that often. Saeed?
What are the restrictions on privately owned surveillance?
Well, none constitutionally. And that's going to be a hot button issue. If you saw last month, our other Josh spoke. Josh and the ACO, you noticed an agenda item for a private camera registry. It was just an informational report, but they want to start documenting all the cameras, and there was an item in there that caught our attention as to allowing OPD remote access to these cameras. And so both the ACLU and a member of the Oakland Privacy Group spoke on their concern on that item. It's just an informational report. If you know Neighborhood Guard, JJ was actually the vice chair of our committee. He's been, you know, spearheading a lot of the cameras that are up in the up in the hills, the groups that are doing that. They want to link them. The city wants to link them. They've wanted to for years. They've rejected it a couple times. They also have loaner programs. Early on, the staff was trying to play games as to, you know, the definitions, city-owned versus city-loaned and city-operated, and to kind of hide the true number of how many cameras were built into the system at one place. So, thank you, sir. Yeah, private surveillance is a big concern. It's going to be a different fight, probably. And obviously people that are putting cameras on their homes are going to be in favor of it, so we're going to need to speak to them in a different manner as far as safeguards.
Now, there's no issue with someone pointing a camera at the public space and recording what's going on there?
If you mean at a convenience store or a home pointing onto a public road? I haven't read case law as far as a camera on a residence pointing out into a public street. And as far as convenience stores, most courts have interpreted it that, you know, it's allowable and you're consenting to be on camera. So I just, you know, again, look at the Oakland Privacy WordPress blog. Contact public safety members, please. Write, blog, tweet, phone calls, talk to your groups, and then just pay attention for future items as we move forward.
Yeah, I don't want to go off on a tangent, but just back on that consumer private issue, I think the use of private consumer drones with cameras is going to be a huge privacy issue. So if you wouldn't just fly those drones around and look in your window or whatever, so I don't know. Right. Maybe not priority A, but at some point it'd be great in Oakland.
And it's, a lot of this stuff is just new, which is why we didn't have a policy. But the law hasn't caught up. The courts haven't caught up.
But yes,
we have an opportunity.
To pile on, but put it on the to-do list maybe as the next thing to address.
Yeah.
Here.
Brian.
Brian, you have a there's an item here about the whistleblower ordinance. Did you discuss that?
I glossed over that. We can just we do have an existing whistleblower ordinance in Oakland. It only allows for city employees to report. As you know, Edward Snowden was a contractor. There's also other third parties that can be involved. So we broadened the definition so that anyone could file a whistleblower report. And we also made multiple avenues so you can report. Previously, you could only complain to the city auditor. We now will have, assuming we get to Standing Privacy Committee, we'll have three different routes that you can report, including our beefed up Public Ethics Commission, which hopefully will actually do something now in the future of Oakland, because it's been pretty bad so far.
Brian, do we have any sense of when the city was going to try and extend the DAC back out from
at the moment, it's a cost thing. No one wants to pay for it. You know, when I was meeting with Schaff before the election and after, she's like, this is number 500 on my priority list. Dan Kalb, he goes, this is so far down the chain. There's, like I was saying earlier, there is a lot of fatigue on this issue. No one wants to deal with it, partly because of the protests. No one wants to pay for it, most importantly. So we might win by attrition. I'll take my victory any way we can get it. But I mean, you know, Gaio wants to expand it. He'll expand it tomorrow if he could. You know, the change in the mayor's office probably dampened that a little bit. But
I'm sorry, Brian, what did you say about public ethics again?
Dan Kalb was effective. Well, the voters passed his proposal to beef up the Public Ethics Commission. It was a joke in Oakland. We had no money, no staff, no enforcement ability. All those factors have now changed. Whistleblowers can go through the Public Ethics Commission now. Previously, it was just linear. You could only go to the city auditor, and that was it. If they did nothing, that was the end of it. So we made multiple routes you can go now. Yeah. So thank you guys for coming. Just pay attention, please, and stay motivated.
Thank you for your work.
Yeah.